Major funding for On Point is provided by Liberty Mutual for all your auto, home, life, and business insurance needs. Liberty Mutual. Responsibility. What's your policy?
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Americans don't need an economist to tell them the economy is in trouble these days. Just look around. Jobs, gas, prices, foreclosure. But we might need an economist or two to size up presidential campaign promises on the economy. It's issue number one now, and John McCain and Barack Obama are going at it hammer and tongs this week. Here's Senator Obama on Monday in Raleigh, North Carolina.
For all of his talk about independence, the centerpiece of John McCain's economic plan amounts to a full-throated endorsement of George Bush's policies.
And here's Senator McCain pushing back yesterday at the National Small Business Summit in Washington.
Will we enact the largest single tax increase since the Second World War, as my opponent proposes, or will we keep taxes low, low for families and employers?
This hour on Point, we've got some top-flight economists to size up what McCain and Obama propose for America's economic woes. Joining me first today from Washington is John Harwood, chief Washington correspondent for CNBC and political writer for the New York Times. He's been following the Obama and McCain lines on the economy this week. John, thanks for being with us.
Hey, Tom, I think we've got the general election equivalent of the Celtics and the Lakers, don't you think?
It's all going on right here. You sat down with Barack Obama this week. He says John McCain is Bush 2, just a continuation. Put on your reporter's hat, step back. Is that true?
Well, it depends on what constitutes Bush 2. He is, in fact, embracing George Bush's tax cuts, which he voted against at the beginning of the administration, but he's taking some stances that George W. Bush has not embraced. He's taking a tougher line on spending, which he has done consistently. He is in favor of, and this is not a strictly dollars and cents issue, but a cap on carbon emissions, so that's something that's different. But look, we at the end of the day, we have a pretty classic matchup between a conservative Republican who is arguing for letting the market do its magic, and even though we're in a tough time right now, and a liberal Democrat who is saying government needs to take a greater role, raise taxes some, raise spending some for particular public purposes, and it's a question of who the public has confidence in. His recent history suggests that John McCain may have the high side of the argument because conservatives, there are more conservatives than liberals in the country, and they've won most recent elections. However, we know that there's a tremendous wave of unhappiness with President Bush right now, and so that gives a real lift for Barack Obama in 2008.
ABC News poll asking people who they trust to handle the economy found voters, though, favoring Obama by 48% recently to McCain's 38%. When Obama talks about taxes and spending, what kind of taxes would he do what on? What kind of spending, and how would he pay for it, John?
A couple things in particular, Tom. Barack Obama wants to raise taxes both as a matter of financing his programs and as a matter of equity and fairness. He wants to raise the taxes on those making more than $250,000 a year, let that portion of the Bush tax cuts expire.
Mm-hmm.
He wants to raise taxes on capital gains and dividends for people at the top as high as 28%, somewhere between 20 and 28%. He has not specified the rate. When Bill Clinton left office, the rate was 20%. That's where Hillary Clinton was in the primaries. And he also wants to raise taxes on Wall Street. There's this phenomenon called carried interest where Wall Street hedge fund managers are taxed at low capital gains rates rather than personal rates. Barack Obama says, no, that's not fair.
They're making billions and paying a lower rate than their secretaries.
Exactly. That's Warren Buffett's argument, which Barack Obama has embraced. Those are the kinds of taxes he wants to raise in order to pay for expanded health care, in order to make the tax code more equitable.
John, here we are, the end of nearly 8 years of George Bush, and the economy doesn't look so great. So what does John McCain say about how he would distinguish himself from the Bush way? Surely he doesn't want to promise more of the same at the moment.
No, he's promising more of the same on taxes. And in fact, he would cut taxes further on corporations. He's making the argument, which has been embraced by the Bush administration and other conservatives lately, that one of the problems for U.S. corporations is that we have uncompetitively high tax rates on their profits. That's one argument he makes. The second argument he makes is that he's going to take a much more serious approach to spending. He was against the recent farm bill. He's against sugar subsidies. He's against, interestingly, Tom, ethanol subsidies. Almost all the politicians campaigning in Iowa. We know how important the
everybody
Iowa
bowed down. Are. Yeah,
exactly. Embrace ethanol subsidies as a way of appealing to Iowans. John McCain says, "Let's get rid of them." That's a clear contrast, not only on spending policy, but also on energy.
So, as this unfolds, John, what do you expect? I mean, the economy is not getting any better. The campaign still has months to go. Have we heard everything from these two yet, or are they going to have to roll out more and bigger plans as the clouds gather? As it seems, they might.
Tom, I think we can't underestimate the different phase that we're in, that is the general election rather than the primaries. One of the things that came out of my interview with Obama, facing that tax hike attack, John McCain's going to try to pull out the old tax and spend label, hang it around Barack Obama's neck. Obama says, look, if I decide when I take office in January that some of my tax increases might harm the economy, I might defer some of those. That's a different point of emphasis. He's trying to reassure people in the middle of the spectrum that he's going to be reasonable and not a liberal ideologue on this. I think there are more turns to that particular storyline in the fall from both of these men, but I do think we are, at the end of the day, going to have a clear contrast.
John Harwood is chief Washington correspondent for CNBC. His new book is Pennsylvania Avenue, Profiles in Backroom Power. He joined us from Washington. John, thanks very much for being with us.
My pleasure.
Let's listen to a little more McCain and Obama yesterday in Washington at that small business summit. Here's John McCain talking about the need to keep taxes low for individuals and businesses and investors.
As president, I intend to act quickly and decisively to promote growth and opportunity. I intend to keep the current low income investment tax rate. I intend to keep them, not repeal them. I'll pursue tax reform that supports the wage earners and job creators who make this economy run and help them to succeed in a global economy.
John McCain yesterday, and here's Senator Obama in North Carolina Monday saying McCain's economic policy is a continuation of George W. Bush.
John McCain says we've made great progress. That's a quote. He says we've made great progress in our economy these past 8 years. He calls himself a fiscal conservative. And on the campaign trail, he's a passionate critic of government spending. And yet, he has no problem spending hundreds of billions of dollars on tax breaks for big corporations and a permanent occupation of Iraq. Policies that have left our children with a mountain of debt.
There you've got it. Barack Obama and John McCain back to back on the economy. I'm joined now in the studio by two crackerjack economists to help us sort out the McCain and Obama ways on the economy. Alan Sinai is chief global economist, strategist, and president of Decision Economics, financial advisory firm out of New York, Boston, and London. He was previously chief global economist and managing director of Lehman Brothers Global Economics. Alan Sinai, welcome. Great to have you here.
Yeah, nice to be here, Tom.
And Robert Pindyke, professor of economics and finance at the Sloan School of Management at MIT. He's written the textbook on facets of finance, including the big econometric models and economic forecasts. That's what we need to know. Robert Pindyke, thank you very much for joining us.
It's a pleasure to be here. Thanks, Tom.
So, Alan, first to you. It sounds like we've got a real choice and maybe the classic choice, Republican, Democrat, with these two candidates. Is there a big fork in the road for Americans to consider as they decide on economic terms where they might want their vote to go?
Yeah, this is a very big contrast. The election of one or the other will result in huge changes in what we have had. It's very important. Senator McCain, candidate McCain, is a big tax cutter. Tax cuts do help, but it's a big tax cutter. He's going to cut the AMT. He's going to repeal the AMT, which is very
punitive. Alternative minimum tax. We'll talk about that.
Yeah, he's going to extend all the Bush tax cuts, and he's going to cut corporate taxes, and he's going to cut government spending. I'm sure he will be tougher than George Bush, the current president, doing that. But you can't get enough money out of what's left non-defense if we do the Iraq war and continue that to take care of those tax cuts. So we're left with a huge deficit result, and probably the argument is we'll get so much growth from those tax cuts that we'll get enough receipts to cover it.
We've heard that before, and the deficit grows.
I think now Obama is very much more using the government and the means of government to equalize what is now a very unequal income distribution. But we want to remember that Senator Obama is not proposing an end to all these investment incentives. He has cleverly picked $250,000 as the dividing line between, let's say, the rich above $250,000.
Between who doesn't get the tax cuts extended and who does.
And the middle class. Mm-hmm. And the middle class gets a lot of dividends and a lot of capital gains between, believe it or not, $250,000 and as low as $50,000. So he still is preserving a lot of tax dividends. The other thing that's very interesting about Senator Obama is his emphasis recently on PAYGO. And so he's basically—
Pay as you go.
If yeah,
you make,
he's basically
if you make,
saying—
tax cuts, pay for them somehow. If you yeah. mark spending, get yep. some taxes.
Both other tax increases and other spending cuts to pay for whatever tax relief we get.
Alan Sinai, stand by. Robert Pindyke, if it's Obama, if he should take office next January, will Americans feel a real turn of the wheel? After 8 years of Clinton and 8 years of George W. Bush, would an Obama presidency feel, in economic terms, like a new way?
Well, I think if you make more than $250,000 a year, your taxes will go up with Obama. I think there's no question about that. But that's not the middle class. You have to remember that if you make more than $250,000 a year, you're in the top 2 or 3% of the income distribution in this country. I think that's rich. I don't think that's middle class. Mm-hmm. So for very high income people, I think an Obama presidency does mean higher taxes. Whereas that would not be the case with McCain. The two candidates are very similar, though, in one respect. Mm. In both cases, we're going to have very serious deficit problems. In both cases, with both candidates, they're going to have to come up with some way to deal with deficits. The tax increases on people with making more than $250,000 are just not going to amount to a whole lot of revenue.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about Obama, McCain, and the U.S. economy. Whose plans might mean what for an economy in trouble? I'm joined by two top-notch economists, Robert Pindyke, professor of economics and finance at the Sloan School of Management at MIT, and Alan Sinai, chief global economist at Decision Economics. Let's hear just a bit more from the candidates. Again, yesterday at the National Small Business Summit in Washington, Senator McCain here focusing on tax cuts and what he says they would do for the middle class.
So parents can spend and save more for their own children. I'll propose to double the size of the child tax exemption, double it. I will also propose as well a middle class tax cut, a phase out of the alternative minimum tax to save more than 25 million middle-class Americans. Save more than 25 middle-class families as much as $2,000 in a single year.
We'll talk about whether phasing out the AMT is really for the middle class. Here's Senator Obama again on Monday in Raleigh saying he announced his intentions to help Americans and said he has another stimulus package in mind, saying the first round of stimulus we've all heard about didn't do enough.
We have to do more. And that's why I've called for another round of fiscal stimulus, an immediate $50 billion to help those who've been hit hardest by this economic downturn. Americans who have lost their jobs, their homes, are facing rising costs in everything from food to a gallon of gas. We've got to give them some relief right now. We need a second round of rebate checks to help people with their soaring gas and grocery bills. We need to expand unemployment benefits and extend them for those who can't find another job right away, especially since the long-term unemployment rate is nearly twice as high as it was during the last recession. And we must help the millions of homeowners who are facing foreclosure through no fault of their own.
Barack Obama and John McCain. We'll come back and look at the details they're laying out right there. But first, I just want to get from each of our economists in the studio with me a sense of where this economy stands right now, what it's up against, what whoever is president is going to be up against when he now takes office in January. Robert Pindyke, how would you describe this moment and the way in front of us for the U.S. economy?
Well, at the moment, we're in a recession. So the issue right now is what's going to happen to unemployment, what's going to happen to growth over the next 6 months to a year. And neither candidate actually has a whole lot to say about that. The stimulus package that Obama proposes, the $50 billion, is in a sense a drop in the bucket. The previous stimulus package was $200 billion. We have a $14 trillion economy, so to think about what $50 billion means, it's about a third of 1% of total GDP. So it wouldn't
just do very sending much. Out the checks costs something.
That's right. And you have to send out the checks. So it wouldn't do a whole lot. In the longer run, assuming that this recession ends in a year or so, in the longer run, both candidates are going to face a big problem with deficits. And they disagree philosophically in terms of taxes on higher income wealthy individuals versus lower income people. They disagree on that. But both of them will nonetheless face very large and growing deficits, and they're going to have to find some way to deal with those. Obviously, you want to get rid of waste. McCain talks about that all the time. But there's just a certain amount of waste you can eliminate. And you want to get rid of farm subsidies. That's right. That makes sense. Very, very hard to do that given the political power of large farmers in states that matter a lot politically.
Do you think that these candidates' feet can be held to the fire in the campaign process that we've come to know so well now on these deficits to really get them to confront, and thereby the country to confront, what they mean and how they might be actually dealt with?
Well, I don't know. There'll presumably be some debates, and moderators of those debates might ask some tough questions. But it's pretty hard to hold them to the fire in during a campaign. Each of them will say that we have to eliminate loopholes, we have to eliminate waste, we have to eliminate wasteful spending. Mm. The only real difference in terms of spending actually is the war in Iraq. And to the extent that Obama would end that war sooner, that's a very big source of spending reduction.
A $1 billion every time you turn around being spent there.
That's
Alan
right.
Sinai, what about your summary of this economic moment right now? How bad, what are the dynamics you see at work that these candidates are both facing?
We're in a very bad recession. The numbers, the GDP numbers, don't really tell us that. It's a bust in housing, home prices going down. It is a depression-like situation in the financial system. I don't think there's a lot of sympathy for Wall Street, but that is a place that provides a lot of funding, and credit is restrained, and the working out of the problems of the financial institutions, banks and non-banks, is going to take a long time. And lately, we are seeing the consumer bear the brunt of this higher inflation, higher unemployment, and it looks like consumer spending is going to be weak, anemic, stagnant for a very, very long time. Because the excesses that we have gathered in terms of spending and borrowing, the debt of the consumer sector, have put our consumers in a tough position. Jobs are going to be harder. The unemployment rate is going to rise. Energy costs are higher. Food costs are higher. This may be the first time in decades that we're going to see a very prolonged period of weak consumer spending. So we are stuck in stagnation. And this is not just going to be a recession that lasts a year or so. This is going to last a long time. And we also have a lot of inflation at the same time. It's an ugly situation to be in, and the statistics don't tell us how bad it is. American consumers know how bad it is because if you look at the sentiment surveys, we are in the University of Michigan Sentiment Survey and Conference Board Survey. We're at deep recession lows in terms of how Americans feel. They have the right scoop on it, and I don't think there's much the candidates can be able to do in the short run to relieve the situation that is confronting us.
Well, let me ask you, Robert Pindyke, you're both kind of in the middle. Robert Pindyke may be tilting toward Obama, you perhaps tilting more toward the McCain approach. You can speak for yourselves on that. But you were for tax cuts under George Bush. Maybe they went a little further than you would have suggested. But here, John McCain now says, well, if I'm George W. Bush, you, Barack Obama, are Jimmy Carter. And you stand for stagflation and Carter, and he wasn't effective. Look back. The 70s were a time of stagflation. There's fear of that again now. Ronald Reagan came in. Love him or hate him, the economy turned around. Do we have that option again?
No, it's just the opposite. The stagflation comes at the end of the Bush administration. So unfortunately for Senator McCain, he gets pinned with results that look terrible. I mean, we had some very good years, but right now it's terrible, and that's the results of what's going on in the Bush administration. I'd hate to be having that baggage around my neck to run on, and frankly, I don't think I would promise the same kind of approach that he's promising. The Obama, and I want to be careful. I appreciate, Tom, what you said about maybe the slant of the two of us, but Senator Obama has picked up, appropriately so, on a couple of major themes. His economics are designed to focus on the middle class. Bush economics and McCain economics focuses on the rich. And on
trickle down corporations.
Yeah.
Now, if indeed that is your desire.
Well, there's a lot to the trickle-down notion in terms of how it energizes our economy that is out of mainstream macroeconomics. But this is not the time for that. And what is interesting about the Obama campaign, for one reason or another, he has picked up in his economic proposals and the slant of them really the mood of the American people, which is outrage in terms of the rising income and wealth inequality, outrage in terms of the position they're in, and his economic plan, which actually is fiscally responsible on the pay-go approach, if he sticks to that.
If you can do it.
Is, I think, going to resonate much more with the American electorate than the Senator McCain approach. As good as I think tax cuts are for growth, this is not the time to do all those tax cuts that he's talking about when he can't possibly finance it.
McCain can't. Robert Pindyke, how about it? We've been through cycle after cycle. Their positions are being described as, on their face, kind of classically Republican and classically Democrat positions, so they've got some of their own twists on that. When you look at this economy, do you see it as a moment for a Republican economic kind of massage or a Democratic massage?
Well, in the short run, over the next year, it's not a time to – certainly not a time to raise taxes. It's not even a time to cut spending because right now, as Alan said, we're in a pretty bad recession. So the last thing you want to do is anything that would – that would make the recession worse. You want to stimulate the economy, not increase taxes or cut spending. In the longer run, certainly if you just listen to the two candidates, they sound classically conservative Republican versus liberal Democrat. That's how they sound. But again, in the longer run, when it actually comes to governing, when it actually comes to a year from now, a year and a half from now, they're both going to face very similar problems in terms of taxes and deficits.
We'll come in and look at how they might approach those, and maybe we don't even know yet. A lot of things happen on the fly once somebody's in the White House. But let's turn to our listeners from East Hoosick, New York. Nina's calling. Hi, Nina. You're on the air.
Hi. Thank you. I have some questions about oil. First of all, more general questions and then a specific question about the candidates themselves. I'd like to ask the economist the following. How high do you see the price of a barrel of oil going? Second, do you have any idea or thoughts about when Bernanke would raise interest rates? And third, pertaining to the candidates, do you think that raising tax on oil companies, although it's a good populist idea, would in fact be a disincentive to lowering prices at the pump?
Nina, we've got it. Let's go to the oil questions first, then we'll turn to interest rates. Robert Pindyke, of course, Congress this week talking about a windfall profits tax. Barack Obama, and failing, Barack Obama talking about a windfall profits tax. Nina's questions, how high does oil go? Goldman Sachs says $200 within a couple of years. And does a windfall profits tax make sense on the big oil companies? And does it have a significant economic impact if the country would go to it?
Well, I can tell you exactly what will happen with oil prices.
good. Here,
here you go. Ready?
Down.
It's just like the stock market. They're either going to go up or they're going to go down.
Yeah.
And if I knew which way they were going to go, I wouldn't be sitting here. I'd run out and make a lot of money on the futures market. Basically, we can't predict the price of oil. Right now, we can understand. We can look back over the past year. We can understand why oil prices got to $135 or so a barrel. We know that it's certainly possible for oil prices to continue to rise. It's the result of growing demand, largely from Asia, and an inability of suppliers to increase output. In fact, supplies have been reduced for many countries. Russia, Mexico, other countries are reducing, not able to produce as much as they'd like. That's caused prices to go up. Where they'll go in the next year or two, we really can't say. It depends on what happens to demand. It depends in part on the recession, not only in the United States, but worldwide.
Historic high profits for the oil companies. Should they be taxed, a windfall profits tax?
Well, the problem with a windfall profits tax is then it reduces the incentive to go out and explore for new oil. Because if you know that in good times, when prices are high, you're going to get taxed. In bad times, you're not going to get anything back. That reduces the incentive to go out and explore. So I'm not in favor of a windfall profits tax for oil. I don't think that will – certainly won't do anything in the short run, and I think it would be detrimental in the longer run.
Alan Sinai, Nina asks about Bernanke and interest rates. And here we get into the whole inflation picture and the strictures that the U.S. is kind of under now, with the global dynamics being what they are. They're like oil prices. I guess nobody knows what's going to happen there. But how do you see the campaign feeding into interest rates and the dollar and U.S. options there?
We can't predict the weather, but we have to predict it
anyway.
I think for the lady on, by the way, in oil, it's not so much oil, it's gasoline. And gasoline prices at $4, more likely to go to $5 a gallon than to $3 a gallon, which presumes that oil prices stay pretty high, crude oil prices stay pretty high, and the refining stays as tight as it is. Mm. I do have a view on the windfall profits tax, which is I'm not sure I'd call it that. I think the profits of the oil companies are quite huge. We could tax that. But then it's what we do with those funds. And if we put them out in the form of subsidies and incentives for exploration, for refining, and use the market system with those funds, we might get some better results that we're getting now because they're not really doing enough drilling and refining. On Bernanke and interest rates, the Federal Reserve has made it very clear, and this is important for your listeners, they're through helping out and saving the economy in terms of the liquidity they've pumped in and the cuts in interest rates because there are lags, and they're going to wait now to see whether what they've done keeps the economy doing well enough. And now they're turning their attention to what is really their number one job, which is to make sure inflation doesn't get out of hand and inflation expectations get out of hand. Both of those are out of hand. So I think there are interest rate hikes coming down the road. I don't think soon. Not any sooner than later this year. There's a bit of tactics here in the verbiage. But the message is very clear. No more rate cuts. And the next move will be up on rates.
Robert Pindick, connect the dots then between the inflation threat, or more than a threat, we've got it going now, and the proposals, the general posture of these two candidates, which looks more effective in dealing with the period where we may have stagnation and inflation, and why?
Right. Well, first of all, I don't think inflation is all that terrible right now. I don't think inflationary expectations have gotten that high. Remember, during the early 1980s, we had inflation peaking at 14%. We had double digits.
I remember. It wasn't fun.
It wasn't fun. But we're talking now about inflation rates on the order of perhaps 3 or 4%. So that's above a 2% target. It would be better to have a 2% rate of inflation than a 4% or 3% rate of inflation. But we're still not dealing with extremely high rates of inflation. I don't see inflation as a huge problem right now. There's no question that higher energy prices, and I don't think it's just gasoline because people pay for heating, they pay for electricity. Mm-hmm. Electric prices are up, and you use coal and oil to produce electricity.
And in every product we buy that's trucked to us from somewhere.
Exactly. But, yeah. One of the reasons why food is up is because you got to truck it, you got to move it. Airline fares are going up because of the fuel. So it's energy overall, not just gasoline, and that is a problem. That does create a burden on consumers. It reduces consumer spending. It adds to the recessionary pressures that we're under.
Do you see either candidate as having a real breakout energy strategy that's clear in their economic policy?
No, both candidates talk about incentives to new technologies. McCain correctly rejects subsidies to ethanol, or at least he did at one point. I think he may have flipped on that one. At one point, he rejected subsidies for ethanol. He may have turned around on that because of the importance of Iowa. But both candidates talk about spending money on new alternative fuels. You know, that's very nice, but that's not going to solve any problems probably in the next 5 or 8 years. So neither candidate right now has very much to offer in terms of energy, in terms of higher energy prices, and in terms of what we're going to do to reduce dependence on imported oil.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking about Obama, McCain, and the U.S. economy, whose plans might mean what for an economy that is clearly now in trouble. Robert Pindyk joins us, economist and finance professor of finance at MIT's Sloan School of Management. Alan Sinai is here, chief global economist for Decision Economics. Let's go to Denise in Franklin, Tennessee. Denise, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
Always appreciate your show.
Thank you.
Depth in the scope is great. Thanks for taking my call. Yeah. I have a question I don't think anyone's addressing, and I would be very interested to hear what your economists have to say. I think that it seems to me we're facing a new paradigm where the U.S. economy no longer kind of is the leading light for the world. The saying used to be the U.S. gets a cold and the world gets the flu. And you could watch global commodities basically rise and fall with the supply-demand situation in the U.S., for example. And that's no longer the case. The U.S. economy has been on the decline for at least a few months now, and commodities prices continue to rise. It's not just hold, they're rising. It seems to me with the rise of other nations kind of concept of Fareed Zakaria, we may not have the systems in place to just play our own little game anymore like the whole world's going to play along.
Yeah, we're clearly part of a great big economy now and not necessarily the biggest part anymore, or at least as others rise, our size is less imposing. When you look at that, Alan Sinai, what does that mean for presidential economic policy, for what we should expect to hear from serious candidates?
The lady who's called in is a wonderful economist, has a great sense of history. The sense of history and the tide of history and economics not on our side. There's seismic shifts in the size and role of the United States in the global economy and of other parts of the world like Asia and the third world. We're no longer rich, we're poor. And lots of countries that went bankrupt 10, 12 years ago are rich. China has $1.7 trillion foreign exchange reserves. Mm. The tide has really turned. We no longer are the dog that wags the tail. We're more the tail that gets wagged by goes on the rest of the world.
So what does that mean on the campaign trail? We don't want to be told fairy tales by candidates, even though part of us may want to hear fairy tales.
What's so intriguing about the question is so few people really appreciate this in this country. It's an alarming tendency and trend for the long run for us, and I don't think the candidates appreciate it. I don't think they have the long-run worldview that is, maybe because of my age, alarming me immensely, so that if we don't tackle in a big-picture way energy, Bob mentioned, we don't have any real energy program. We don't tackle the deficit in health care in a big way, and we don't take a good look at our role vis-a-vis the whole world economically and politically, we're going to, relatively speaking, be losing out.
Bob Pindyke, what about it? Are we getting a sobered up view from these candidates, or still kind of the joy juice, we're number one, always will be, off we go?
Well, I don't think either candidate's really promoting we're number one and everything's great point of view. I think both of them have enunciated some of the problems that exist. I think it's true that, the rest of the world is growing. One of the reasons why commodity prices, not just energy, but all commodity prices are going up is because other parts of the world, mainly Asia, countries like China, India, are growing rapidly. Incomes are growing, and their demand for commodities of all sorts, whether it be iron, copper, energy, whatever, is growing very rapidly. And that is going to continue, and that is something that we're going to have to face. It will mean that unless new supplies of these commodities are found, prices will continue to rise.
But if you had candidates who are completely at grips and open and honest about our economic situation today in this world, what would they be saying that these two perhaps are not?
I think in terms of the growth of the rest of the world, I don't think there's a whole lot they could say. I'm a little worried when Obama talked during the primary campaigns about restrictions on trade and NAFTA and things like that.
Do you think he'll do it?
Well, I don't know what he would do. Again, what happens when somebody actually becomes president can be very different from what happens during a campaign. I think it would be a mistake to withdraw from the global economy and start imposing all kinds of restrictions on trade. That would make us worse off, never mind what it would do to other countries.
Alan Sinai, do you fear Barack Obama would actually carry through on some of that? We saw the deal where his economic advisor in Chicago, Goolsbee, said, oh, no, he's just blowing smoke for the campaign.
No, I don't think so. It doesn't make sense. And he's too bright and his advisors are too bright to let him go too far on trade. Renegotiating and taking another look at the trade agreements makes some sense, but going against free trade and globalization is no longer can possibly occur.
What do you think we'd be hearing from these candidates if they were more fully at grips or more willing to talk more honestly about the American economic
situation? I find very few people that are as worried as I am about the long-run future of this country, so I don't think they're there, and I'm not surprised that they're not there. And I think even if they were there, they can't in a political campaign sound as gloomy as I sound when I give candid talks about the future of the U.S. Vis-a-vis the rest of the world. It is a very dangerous and scary situation to me, and I don't think I've looked at it this way for decades. Power ends at some point.
Mm-hmm. It comes, it goes,
and we're not going to be number one, and we may settle for that. That may be fine, but the real question is, what does it mean for the standard of living and the aspirations for the American people? And while I find a lot in each of these candidates' commentaries that help me along those lines, the awareness of them and the country to the trends that are unmistakable, that we pick up very much in the financial markets, because that's where you see it first, are just very disturbing. They couldn't say it, even if they believed it, because you can't, in our political world, sound too gloomy, because...
You can't talk like that.
You can't talk like
that. And get elected. Let's go to Nashville, and Ray. Ray, you're on the air.
Hi. Yeah, I just have one quick question. Obama is saying the economy is shot. McCain saying it's great. Which one is living in fantasy land and or lying? And thank you. I'll take the answer off the air.
Robert Pindyke, you're Obama sympathetic, but do you hear McCain saying the economy is great and Obama saying it's shot?
No, I haven't heard that. I think...
But McCain's trying to put the best face he can on. Clearly, he's a Republican coming in behind a Republican.
He has, as Alan mentioned, McCain has a problem. He's got a Bush legacy to deal with that he's got around his shoulders, and that's not going to be easy. But I don't think that he's saying that everything's great. I think he acknowledges that there are issues with energy. There are issues with he's a Republican who wants to do something about global warming and greenhouse gas emissions. So I don't think he's saying that everything's great. I think he does believe, at least he's talking as though he believes, that continuing the Bush tax cuts on high-income individuals is a good idea. But other than that, I don't think he's claiming that.
Though he opposed them before. What about Obama? He talks a lot about a huge investment in American infrastructure. That sounds like jobs, but that costs a lot of money. Where does that come from in his proposal?
So, one way to invest in infrastructure is things like a gasoline tax, which, and fortunately, Obama did not propose a summer tax holiday on gasoline, eliminating the federal tax, the 18-cent gas tax. Ultimately, if we want to reduce imports of oil, we're probably going to have to increase taxes on gasoline. That money could be used for infrastructure, badly needed infrastructure, roads, bridges, and so on. And that would be a good thing for the economy overall.
Alan Sinai, what about on health? Health care expenses are gigantic. We've got different tax here from Obama, something closer to universal coverage from him. McCain, probably something out of the markets and market coverage. Do you see a better or worse solution in either of these?
They're only pieces of the big puzzle of dealing with health care and the drain of health care inflation and expenditures for aging population, the federal budget, which is the biggest drain on our federal budget in terms of future deficits.
And going to get bigger, yeah.
Eventually, it's like energy. Eventually, we've got to come to grips with it. Now, we have not in this country really come to grips with the energy, and look where we are today. We're looking at unemployment and inflation because 20, 30 years ago, we didn't have the courage, and our political leaders didn't have the courage to lead us into really bite the bullet and get tough in how we conserve on energy, and look where we are today. Same is true on health care. The sooner we get confronted with the mess that it is, the expense that it is, and how to rationalize that system and what it's going to do to the budget deficit and to us as a nation, the better off we are.
Who's biting the bullet, McCain, Obama?
Nobody is biting the bullet. Nobody's biting the bullet in the big picture way on energy. Nobody is calling us to the kind of sacrifice we have to make, which would involve a higher tax on gasoline, which who could it call for that? Higher tax on gasoline with the funds used, as Bob suggests. Mm. And no one is really, none of the candidates have anything other than little pieces kind of dealing with, let's get everybody covered in one way or the other, and that's about as far as they're going on health care. And I think that's really unfortunate. And I don't hear them talking about Social Security and that problem either. So, they're not – I'm encouraged to see this much discussion of the economy this early and the laying out of plans by both candidates and a clear contrast in certain ways for Americans to decide upon. But I'm very discouraged in that they're not leading us and calling us to arms the way, in my idealistic sense at my advanced age, I would love to see our leaders do.
Bob Pindyke, the alternative minimum tax, it was first put out there to make sure that even the rich paid some income tax. It's biting deeper and deeper down now and into the middle class. We heard John McCain in the clip earlier saying that he proposes as a middle class tax cut, a phase out of that AMT. But I'm reading here that 80% of that benefit would go to the top 10% of American earners. So, number one, is that a middle class tax cut? Number two, how would he pay for it? Nobody else seems to figure out how to do that if it does get phased out.
Well, two things. First, if you think the top 10% of the income distribution is the middle class, then I guess it's a middle class tax cut. But as you've said, and that's
leave 90% out of the equation.
It's quite right. I mean, the alternative minimum tax falls mostly on people in the top 10% of the income distribution. So it's getting rid of the AMT is not really a middle class tax cut. It's an upper class tax cut. The AMT needs to be reformed, but calling it a middle class tax cut is not correct. So I think that's just a little bit misleading.
Talk to us about the teams that each of these. It matters a lot who's whispering in whose ear. What economists or, you know, where do they turn? Where's McCain turn? Where's Obama turn for their central advice? I mean, on McCain's side, Douglas Holtz Eakin, I think you know him, Alan Sinai. Who's he and who else is in the inner circle of McCain's economic advice giving?
Doug is a very solid, balanced economist with a great sense of policy. He was a very independent, objective head of the CBO, appointed in a Republican administration, and he took positions that ran against, particularly on the deficits. He's very much in sympathy with McCain's balance of budget, cut taxes, supply side approach, and finance it by cutting government spending. The only problem is there isn't enough to cut, especially if you want to keep fighting the war in Iraq. As far as Obama goes, as far as I know, the younger guy, Goolsbee, who's advising him, I think he's enlarging the net now, is I think Bob would agree, one of the leading lights of the economics profession. And he's not an ivory tower academic economist. He's a very practical person.
Bob Pindyke, what about the Obama advisory corps here on the economy? Well, who's there?
I think Austin Goolsbee is very, very smart. I think he's a great advisor. I think that both candidates are getting very good advice. And both of them will continue to pull in people as they as the campaigns go on, and they'll continue to get good advice. I mean, the problem that both of them face is that they're in a tough spot. Both of them are in a tough spot. It's nice to talk about cutting spending. It's nice to talk about, you know, dealing in the long run with deficits, but neither one really has very much in the way of specifics that would solve problems in the long run. And it's politically difficult to talk about things like gasoline taxes, talk about real spending cuts that would have to be made if indeed you're going to cut taxes. So there's a limit to what either of them can say. Both of them can get lots of good advice. That's not a problem. The problem is, what are they willing to say? What is the electorate willing to listen to?
Let's listen ourselves. Jim in Providence, Rhode Island, what do you hear?
Oh, hi. All this doom and gloom, your guests should be on the corner with the world's going to end.
With the sandwich boards, huh? The end is near.
My grandmother's 96 years old. She survived the Depression. She's still here now. She's still doing okay. If she can survive the Depression, we all can survive this. We'll be okay. We're America. We'll survive. That was my comment. Thank you.
We got it. Too much gloom and doom. Robert Pindyke, is there? Where's the sunny side here? I mean, and having made it through the Depression, I'm not sure we want to follow that path. I'm glad Jim's grandma did. But
yeah, well, my mother's 96 too. So, but I think we're to the Alan and I agree on a lot of things here. But I think one area we disagree somewhat is I think Alan is a little more doom and gloom than I am. You know, I think we have some real problems, and I think that in the short run, we're in a serious recession. It could get worse. There are serious problems with respect to consumer debt, credit card debt, defaults. It's not just mortgage foreclosures. It's all kinds of consumer debt. Americans are underwater. Many Americans are underwater in terms of debt. There are things that could get worse in the current recession. We have long-run problems in terms of dependence on imported oil, in terms of budget deficits. But I don't think that the country is headed for, the end, and we're receding, and it's doom and gloom all around.
Alan Sinai, where's the light here?
You know, this may be the depression side of my mania, my manic, bipolar manic mania.
We'll catch you on another day.
You know, I've been wildly bullish at all kinds of times, and our country is very resilient. We'll always do well. But, you know, unless people call attention to the things that need doing and what's wrong and sound pessimistic when they do that, our country doesn't get it, and we don't take the actions we need to take to get the right thing done. And that is one of the great strengths of our country, is that we debate these things, we talk about it, and when we realize we have a big problem, we find ways to solve it. I think that will happen. And part of what I describe it is to increase the awareness that we've got a lot of work to do in this country. And I come from a world, the financial markets, where we don't mince words. We're very straight, got a problem, just go out there and fix it. We got a lot of problems in this country. The candidates encourage me, certainly compared with what we've gone through, a lot, and they got a lot of work to do. And for the caller, yes, he's right. We will all get through this, but not without rolling up our sleeves and our leaders pulling us in and telling us the way things are.
Depression-like situation in the financial system, you said. Who's Wall Street pulling for in this matchup?
You know, I think Wall Street and almost everyone has a question on Washington about competence, and that's a big issue. Where are we going to get the competence of Washington to deal with the very complicated problems that exist? And I think it's mixed on Wall Street. The economic plans of both, I think for Wall Street, the Obama plan is less favorable. McCain plan is more favorable. But I don't think that's necessarily the way all of Wall Street feels in terms of how they feel politically.
Clearly not, if you follow the money. Alan Sinai, Chief Global Economist, Strategist, President at Decision Economics. It's always great having you. Thank you so much for coming in. And Robert Pindyke, Professor of Economics and Finance at the Sloan School of Management at MIT. Thanks for being here, Bob. Great to have you.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure to be here.
Listeners, you can continue the conversation and download the On Point podcast at our website, onpointradio.org. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.